My name is Miguel O'Hara. I'm this dimension's one and only Spider-Man. At least I was. But I'm not like the others. I don't always like what I have to do. But I know I have to be the one to do it. I've given up too much to stop now.
Hello and welcome back to A Stark Contrast, where we discuss the differences and similarities from Marvel Comics to their MCU counterparts. And we're your hosts, Jeffrey.
And I.
Hello, hello, and welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. We are tired.
It's been a week. It's been two weeks. I've lost track of time again.
Yes, yes, definitely.
I'm still like reacclimating myself after coming back from Yosemite, yes. Even though I've been at home the last 2-3 days now.
Sure. And his footsies hurts.
Oh, yeah. I'm in pain right now.
I know. Oh, I feel so weird.
I'm in so much pain. But we vibe out.
We vibe out.
The Lord is good. Life is good.
Life is good. Otherwise, life is good, yes. I had a staycation last week. My friend came to visit.
And nice.
Did all the theme park stuff. We walked 30
miles. I saw that, yeah.
30 miles. 30
in miles. One day?
No.
Oh.
But like across 3.5 days.
Oh.
30 miles.
It's pretty intense.
10 miles a day. I was like, But I still.
And you're not in as much pain as I am right now.
I know.
I walked 3 miles.
And your foot is
breaking. And I'm in like screaming pain.
Oh my God, I feel so awful.
TMI, like Sam was over later and she like, I asked her, can you just massage like the muscle? Because it's like my ankle area.
Yeah.
So it's like the tendon between like the heel and the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
I asked her to like, just, can you just massage it a little bit, please? Yeah. She did. I felt like I was getting murdered.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I was like screaming. Oh, I was like, I'm not gonna scream into the mic, but I was like,
yeah,
I felt like Gambit in episode 5.
How dare you? Dare you? What kind of analogy is that?
Yeah, okay, that's how I felt.
Oh, man. Okay, well, shoot. I hope that gets better as much as I hope that Gambit comes back to life. So I guess I can move our I was going to put this last, but do you want to do some quick reactions to X-Men episodes 5 and 6?
You can do some quick ones. I'll touch on 6 first because I think episode 5 was the okay. the craziest thing. Yeah.
So
episode 6.
Life and Death Part 2.
Part 2.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, I think it was obviously more of a chiller episode of like okay, let's take it back a little bit. We know
we
messed y'all up in episode 5, so we're gonna have Storm get her powers back, and also surprise, Charles is not dead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, and people have said this about other roles in history just in general, but I was like, they don't need to hire Ross Marquand if he's only gonna voice like 2 lines for Professor Xavier, you know, like this guy. Again, he was on screen as Red Skull for Infinity War and Endgame. He has played multiple X-Men characters, not X-Men, Marvel characters, in just pop culture general. He's such a great voice actor. So I was like, they're not gonna hire him just to do like Magneto, you know, like, and that's it. Like, they're not going to.
So I was like,
he has to be in here for a long game. Lo and behold, Professor Charles Xavier is very much alive, and he's very much in space.
Yeah,
where we last saw him in the original series. Yeah, you know? And he was dying before. So I'm curious how. Or if they're even going to address, like, did he get better? Was he even sick at all? Is that part of continuity?
Yeah.
But he's back.
Dude, it was so cool watching that episode because we've done our Professor X episode.
Sure.
So I kind of
understood,
knew,
yeah.
Like, the, I saw, like, because I watched it with captions.
Yeah.
And so I saw, like, the name Lalandra, and I was like, wait. And I was like, isn't that?
I love Lalandra.
I was like, wait, is that? Wait, whose love interest is that? And then I was like, oh. And I was
the
like,
bird people, Shi'ar Empire.
The Milky Way Ghetto.
The Milky Way Ghetto. fine analogy in the entire thing.
To describe Earth is insane.
Yes.
But also not wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that episode was really good. It's sure, like, okay, yeah. Like now episode 7 is going to be like a reunion yeah. almost. Because I think we said...
They're all coming together. Would
you say
now.
10 episodes?
10 8? Episodes.
10
yeah.
episodes for season 1?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So we're almost there. We're at
something's going to happen.
Yeah. Big
and
stuff.
And Sinister is doing some crazy stuff. Boulevard Trask is in some crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's wild. All of yeah. it's wild. It's great because, again, they're really achieving the utilization of like their time. So like every second is crucial in its own way, even if it is a slower episode.
Yeah.
Overall, it's very, very meaningful and it all has yeah. purpose. And it's like, oh, it's so good.
Yeah. And then episode 5, I think.
My God.
Is one, I mean, depending. I yeah. mean, depending who you're at. But I think it's like one of the most like violent portrayals of in television.
I would
and
say
I was,
so.
Because I remember like when after Cable
yeah.
came and to Gene and he left and the attack mm. happened. I was like.
Madeline.
This is. Oh, damn. You're right.
Maddie.
You're right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, this is a very violent scene.
Yeah.
Like,
it's so
these
incredible.
Sentinels are just murdering.
Yeah, they don't look as crazy as the ones in Days of Future Past, right?
Yeah.
But they're still so scary because they just, especially this one, because this was like a intensified version of Master Mold with its multiple heads
yes.
and stuff. But what I don't see, or at least, because, you know, I don't really actively search for things. If I see it on my For You page, I'm like, cool, cool, cool. But otherwise, but I have not quite noticed anybody making this very obvious comparison and correlation of how episodes are treated storyboard wise to anime. It's like straight up anime.
Mm,
like
that's what people, that's what I saw.
There's
yeah.
three specific parts of that episode that came straight out of Evangelion. And I am an Evangelion nut. Like,
nice.
Like the part where Magneto, you know, says like, we will be avenged or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He yeah. throws and the train, right? Yeah.
That's straight out of Evangelion. It's like in Evangelion, it was like a, you know, extending arm or something.
Yeah.
But it hit that the way that they use silence and sound.
Yeah.
Is so incredible. And it's very animated.
It was straight. Like there was no music. Yeah. It was just sounds. Yeah.
Yeah. And then also Rogue looking at her hand is straight out of Evangelion, but it's, I don't want to say what it is in Evangelion, but she's looking at blood in her hand. And then, of course, the entire Gambit scenario,
oof.
Like him fighting in general is very dynamic. And then that final cut where he's just like,
oof.
The name's Gambit, remember it? And then the... Even like the power surging through him,
yeah,
and
dude.
Stab all of them.
Like even that stab, I was like, oh my gosh, that's very. I was like, that's very visceral.
Oh
I was
gosh.
Like, as soon as I saw that, I thought of you, and I was like,
yes, like I felt everybody's energy focus on me in that very moment, like on different whatever. Whenever people watched it, but I could feel when I watched it, I was like, oh my god, everyone is gonna be like. Are you okay? And I got like 12 text messages that day. I was like, but that like for when I watched it, so my friend and I got up really early because we were going to Los Angeles and we're going to go to Universal Studios and do Mario Land and or Nintendo World and all that. So we got up really early. So we're both getting ready, but I was like, oh, I got to watch X-Men because I'm not going to have time until tomorrow,
yeah.
maybe. And so I put it on the iPad as we're getting ready. We're both getting ready. And so we're both watching it. I'm like, you know, finishing up.
Yeah.
And it gets to that part. And I was like, woo! I was like clapping. I was like, oh no, he's gonna die. And then the minute, you know, he was coming in for the kill and he is instead stabbed.
Yeah.
I literally stopped what I was doing. And I was like, oh my God. And then he said the line, yeah. which is a line from the first series.
Yeah.
And then he blew everything up. I was like, what? And then it got worse because then they showed the Rogue part.
Yeah.
And I was like, I legitimately was laughing. I was like, yes. I was like, oh my God, that's my boy. And then I started going, I started bawling. I was crying.
I was watching with my roommate and I remember just like we were staring at we were like
yeah dude,
what
they did that
we were like what just happened then incredible. I then I kept watching it and then I kept watching more that scene
sure.
I like watching like reactions
yeah
so I watched reactions on on YouTube.
Yeah.
And the more I watched that scene at the ending, the more I was like, God. Yo, I am crying right now.
I wish I had recorded myself. Like, I who could ever know, right? Like, unless yeah. you have some sort of idea of what the yeah. premise is, I would I'd be like, nah, I'm not going to waste
time. And then I think
Lenore's
reading of that last yes, line, I was like, incredible. Yo, yeah. she's acting her ass off right
yeah,
now.
I was like, holy crap. No, and so incredible, like so yeah. incredible. And of course she kind of foreshadowed it at WonderCon and saying that, you know, like, oh, there's parts of the series where I really had to
deep, now I know what deep. She meant when she told us like exactly. like she's like, oh, like, don't even, like, there's more, trust
exactly
me
exactly right. And so it's, she is really giving it. I just adore that woman, and her performance is incredible. And so, yeah, I'm very curious what this next episode is going to be like yeah. in the last three in the series altogether.
The cut to black killed me. Oof. And then so and then all you hear is sugar after yeah. the, and I was like, Jesus. Yeah. I was like, oh my God. I was like, what's going on right now?
I know. Oh my God. Everybody was
well, yeah. Cannot wait for the rest.
Yeah. Oh, God. And so speaking of X-Men 97, I have to get up for this. But I got something from Disney Movie Insiders.
Woo!
We're just going to have to rely on your reaction, Jeff.
Okay. All right. Di is digging something up from her coffee table in her secret compartment. And it is... What the... Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
Yeah!
That's humongous.
It is the
X-Men 97 poster on the logo across VHS tapes.
Yes.
It's, whoa.
Yeah. So it's like,
whoa.
Oh, it's part of that program where I got the Guardians of the Galaxy one and all the other posters.
The
as
Disney
well.
Insider?
Yes. So every time.
Oh, that's what you were talking about.
You know, we're to the
dude, wise. That is huge.
Isn't it so cool? Yeah, if you have not jumped on Disney Movie Insiders, you need to jump on this stuff right now.
How big is that? Is that like 20 by something?
This is 27 by 48, I think.
Holy.
And it's free.
Wow.
Free. And that's just like if you're watching Marvel movies, or you're watching Disney movies, or Star Wars movies, and you have that ticket stub, you just go doot doot doot, and it gives you like 350 points. Or you buy movies, anything, and they give you points. I've had like 9,000 points for forever, just because I put them.
How
in.
Much? Was, how many points is that?
This was 850.
What the?
That's it. That's it. I got that one for like I think 850 as well. So,
dude,
you just have to be quick, because once they put them up, it's limited. It's not like they're printing them. This is yeah. what they have left over from promotional yeah. materials. So. Two of the ones that they have left, that is, aside the X-Men one, they do have two other ones, and one is Loki Season 2, and it's that full God Loki picture.
Oh, okay.
And then they just put up Deadpool and Wolverine, the BFF necklace.
Wow.
And I was like, should I do it? And it was like 600. I was like, no, I don't need it. So
wow.
But it is available. So yeah, more X-Men, more excellence. And then in the other corner of the world, Spider-Man Mondays have officially begun. So this past Monday, again, I'm like, wow, busy, so busy.
I saw everybody's post from those Monday showings.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I know. I started engaging with some random Spider-Man fan who was like, wait, you got a poster, which I have over there. And that's almost identical to one I got from 2002.
The original.
For the record. Yeah. It just has a different date at the bottom. But I was like, wow, I didn't expect that at all. And he was like, oh, you got a poster at yours? And I guess he wasn't going to go. But once he realized that the posters were there, he's like, I think I'm going to go. I was like, okay. Whereas some other folks, unfortunately, you know, did not get that. So I feel kind of bad, but I'm like, ooh, well, now you know. They're at least at Regal Theaters. So next up, the Monday after this episode drops, it's going to be Spider-Man 2. Can't wait. Can't wait. Can't wait. Can't wait. It is. It's very surreal. Because I, you know, legitimately have not seen these films.
In years, decades maybe.
Decades since they are actually in theaters for the first time. So I'm very excited about Spider-Man 2. It's definitely one that I haven't seen nearly as much as I could have since its release. But it's on. It's on.
Hell yeah.
And then CinemaCon. So the CinemaCon gave a first look at Deadpool and Wolverine plus Captain America Brave New World. Did you look at any of this content?
Of course.
Yeah.
course.
How do you feel about it? I grazed the surface a bit, but didn't get too deep into.
I mean, well, we didn't see any of the clips,
sure, the descriptions and all.
Yeah, it just seems cool. It seems like Deadpool is living up to its name.
How do you feel about the Wolverine Hugh Jackman look with him with the mask on for the first time?
Wait, we saw that?
They had to put on the product.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, like the cowl with the...
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It's cool, right?
I mean...
Yeah.
I mean, I think people are just longing for this blue and yellow suit.
Blue and yellow.
So it's kind of like, you can't really mess it up. As long as you stay true to the colors, I think people are going to love it.
It's going to be great.
Announcing everything else, like...
Yeah.
Saw new stills from Captain America.
I always forget CinemaCon is a thing. I always forget. And I forget when it happens. And I'm like, I want to go one year.
They announced pretty big stuff there.
And that's in Vegas?
Yeah, I think it's in Vegas.
I think I'm going to go next year. I think I'm going to try and go because I just want to experience like what it's like. I've never been to that show. So, but yeah, Brave New World. So they released some information about Harrison Ford's Thunderbolt being like, bring the Avengers back.
Or is it you're not Steve.
You're not Steve Rogers. You're not Captain. Oh, yeah, you're not Steve Rogers.
And Sam is like, yeah, you're right. I'm not.
Yeah, exactly.
Captain America.
I can't wait. Yeah. Oh, that's great because it is, you know, I read somewhere that it is bringing things back down to the street level, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, spy street sort of interactions that with the rooted interactions that we haven't had for a very long time.
Yeah.
Save for Winter Soldier and Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So looking forward to it. I'm sure that the trailer for that, it can't be far off.
I think
they're going to position it for Comic-Con. That's my prediction. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. I think Comic-Con will be the next big more announcements.
For sure. If not, D23.
That too.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. So just wanted a quick shout out, sort of mention of Loki at PaleyFest. It was awesome. And I think it was, again, it was the first Marvel property that wasn't appearing at a convention.
Mm.
So it's just, it's a television discussion series. And Tom Hiddleston, Sophia DiMartino, and Owen Wilson were all there, along with filmmakers Aaron Moorhead, Justin Benson, who liked our posts, by the way, and Eric Martin. After their For Your Consideration appearance at the altogether at the Dolby Theater, it was really nice because Tom watched the finale of the season in the crowd with us.
Wow!
So I was like, oh, he was really distracting because everybody was looking over at him, like, watching him watch the.
He's like, are you gonna react the way we're supposed to react, Tom?
Yeah. It was really nice though, but he's also always, you know, so well spoken and so humble, and they talked about some moments of the series that they absolutely loved. And it was interesting because their language about it was like, so what do you see next for Sylvie? And Tom himself at one point, I caught him, he said, you know, these first two seasons, I was like, first two seasons? What does that mean? is that mean that there's a third season? Like, who knows?
It's the only show right now that has multiple seasons.
Yeah, exactly.
It has multiple seasons out.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm like, huh.
I'm sorry. There's What If, but you know, but live action.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see what happens next. But they're clearly not done. Like, at least Loki and Mobius and Sylvia's characters are far from done. And then speaking of Loki, so I wanted to say thanks to our friends at Marvel and Penguin Random House Books for a copy of this new, beautiful young adult novel.
Whoa.
What If Loki Was Worthy?
Whoa.
And it's a,
that looks so cool.
a Loki and Valkyrie story.
My God.
Yeah.
This is a long book.
Ignore my Disneyland map. I put it in there. I forgot. But yes, Penguin Random House sent us a copy. And, I haven't had a chance to start it at all yet, but it already looks very enticing. It is part of this new What If series that they're releasing in book form. No pictures, guys. No pictures. far from the traditional comic book version.
I wish I liked to read, man.
I wish I was a better reader. Like, I do like to read, but I haven't read as much as I used to, as a kid.
I'm just not a reader.
Not even comics.
Of books. Maybe of comics, because I'm a visual guy.
Sure.
So I think...
You got to log into my Marvel Unlimited.
I do.
Yeah. It's like 65,000 comic books for free.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And they did. Oh, sorry. And the story was written by Madeline Rowe.
Rue.
And so apparently there are two more subsequent titles coming out soon. Both are available for pre-order, including What If Wanda Maximoff and Peter Parker Were Siblings.
That's crazy.
And it's also like, why? I'm not sure why, but... And then What If Mark Spector Was Host to Venom.
That's crazy.
That's pretty intense. Yeah, they don't have a cover for that one yet, but they do have one for the other one.
Moon Knight still?
That's the question, right? Mm. Like, is it just Mark Spector?
Yeah.
Because it could be an Eddie Brock situation. Yeah. It's just Mark Spector instead. Who's so just he's schizophrenic.
He's a schizophrenic, yeah.
With Venom symbiote?
Yeah.
Like,
Interesting.
So yeah, those two novels are coming out. Loki is available right now, so you can get that wherever your books are sold. And then, stay tuned for Wanda Maximoff and Peter Parker Were Siblings, and Mark Spector was Host to Venom. And last but not least, I wanted to give a shout out to White Gold Industries and White Gold Grails for my X-Men mesh shorts.
Nice.
I love those shorts.
Nice.
I remember I was like, it's like for the 13,000 follower giveaway.
Nice.
And when I read it, it was simple as just comment with your favorite X-Men. And I dropped a Gambit GIF, as I do. And I was like, I'm not going to win, but I just want to use a Gambit GIF. And then lo and behold... Your girl won. One of two people.
Yes,
sir. And then so they sent me a pair of the hero version. There's hero and villain. And I was like, oh, no. Give me that villain. Give me the heroes. And so I got them, and they're fantastic. They're cozy as heck. They are selling a new edition that are yellow and blue. And they've got the infamous Gambit basketball scene on it. And I was I don't know. I might get them too, but we'll see. But yeah, so check out whitegoldindustries.com for more awesome 90s vibe t-shirts of all kinds. So all that said, I think that we're ready to jump into our episode, no?
Yes.
Yes. So just a reminder before we get to that, we're not experts and we don't claim to be. We're just a couple of nerds nerding out. And in this episode, we will be nerding out over Miguel O'Hara, a.k.a. Spider-Man 2099.
With humongous shoulders. The guy with humongous shoulders.
Broad shoulders. Broad shoulders. So Miguel was created by Peter David and Rick Leonardi, and he first appeared in The Amazing Spider-Man number 365. It has a very cool holographic cover that you can't quite tell from a digital perspective. Let me cover this price up so you can guess it properly, but this is what it looks like. And so this was early on where it's a hologram. So
yeah.
So in real life it was like harder cardstock for the cover, and this portion was like a hologram card.
Whoa.
So when you moved it, it's like Spidey was like swinging. Yeah. And so this issue was cover dated August 1992. Speaking of all good things, 92.
Wow.
And so this was considered a preview of the character, and yet it's still designated as his first appearance.
Yeah.
Not sure why, but it is more or less, it showcases three preview pages of Spider-Man 2099 number one.
Mm.
So technically it's a first appearance because it appeared here first. And so this was, of course, the supersized 30th anniversary issue of The Amazing Spider-Man. So that makes a lot of sense why they would put it in there. Oh, sorry. 5-page preview of Spider-Man 2099 as listed on the bottom. So they do have, you know, when I was doing the prices, I was like, okay, I get it. You can also pick up Spider-Man 2099 number one cover dated November 1992 to get both. But they have comparable prices. Like they're both pretty much aligned. You could get them for about the same price. Pretty reasonable all around. Now, do you want to guess how much
cover price
this holographic let me just zoom in, how much this hologram cover of 30th anniversary Spider-Man,
so on that we got holographic cover,
yes,
and we have 1992 where inflation has gone up,
yes, and it's a supersized issue,
super, so it's bigger than 8.5 by 11.
Not that way. More pages.
Oh.
More pages.
Ooh.
Yeah.
More pages.
So let me read this thing here. Inside, the most shocking event of Spider-Man's life, plus gatefold poster of Spidey, Venom, and Carnage, plus Stanley and John Romita Sr. reunited, plus the return of the Lizard, plus a 5-page preview of Spider-Man 2099. All in this one issue. With a hologram cover and cardstock.
85 cents.
1992?
I mean, is that too high?
It's too low.
Oh.
Way too low.
Man, because I remember the 70s, 80s was like...
But this is 92.
I know, but damn, it went up that much.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Let me go...
This one will surprise you.
Oh. $1.50?
No. That's not even half.
Wow.
This
issue... See, inflation sucked, man. The 90s.
Which is crazy because this issue is about as much as the issues, regular issues are now, which is almost backwards. But this issue at the time of its printing was a cool $3.95.
Oh my God.
Which was a lot of money.
That's expensive.
Yeah. You know how much I had to save just to get this $5 comic book?
Dude, remember when McDoubles were a dollar?
Exactly. Hash browns are $2.99 now. One hash brown.
Dude. A McChicken is like two something now.
Crazy.
I want to cry.
Do not like.
Yeah.
So
$3.95
in 1992 was a big deal, you know? And so on Shortboxed, I found a CGC 9.8 with a remark and a signature from artist Mark Bagley. And so Mark Bagley, again, he's rather iconic as far as all the Spider-Man books are concerned. So he did a sketch on the cover. And so you could get that for $700. And it's still not the highest price. A regular version with no signature and no remark is up for $725. Whereas on eBay, it's just slightly more expensive. You could get a CGC 9.8 for $800. But in our Delulu pool, there's a CGC 5.5 signed by Stan Lee for $80,000. At that point, it's like, you know, you don't want to let it go. So why do you have it up?
What comic book just sold for like 1.something million? Was it the first issue of Superman?
Yeah, Action Comics. Yeah. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
The very first edition of Superman.
The first edition of Superman's first appearance. Yeah.
My God. Jeff's
faces are the best. Just imagine having that money. You're like, I feel like. You're like, you're going into your local comic book shop. You're like... I'll take that Action Comics and that, that Amazing Fantasy. Yeah, that'll do it, I think. And that's like, okay, that'll be $1.9 million.
It's insane. It's
so crazy. So yeah, so somebody's selling a 5.5 signed by Stan Lee for $80,000. And then there's an error version, a 9.8.
Say an error version?
An error. There's no hologram card. It's
I thought
just
you were going to say like a Taylor Swift version. An error version?
So there's an error version where there's just a white space. Speaking of Taylor Swift, there's just a blank space.
See? Where did she get it from? I don't know.
By the way, Tortured Poets department is dropping tonight, I guess.
I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard.
So I've heard. But yeah, so there's one without a hologram card. And that is, you know, as we've seen in previous episodes, that's actually a good thing in some ways. If you get one that has some defect, some irregularity, it's mm-hmm. worth more.
Jeez.
So someone's selling that for $19,500.
Oh, my God. Ah. So why couldn't I get into comics when I was a kid?
Oh man. See, I'm waiting. I need to grade all my babies. And so the lowest on the lowest spectrum, Shortbox had a CGC 8.0. That's the lowest that they have on Shortbox. 8.0. So it's relatively modern. So unless you took really bad care of it, there's just no way you're going to have a bad copy. But you could get that for $49. Or 125, depending on who you're buying from.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. And then on eBay, a CGC 6.5 last sold for $5.50, which is insane because the grading alone costs $70.
Oh, wow. So that guy got it graded.
Oh, yeah.
And it still costs.
And it's still, and it only sold for $5.
That's crazy.
But again, this is a prime example of if you're a smart shopper, oof, and you just want the book. For 6.5, okay, cool, $5, boom. That's less than a latte, you know, at this point. And so the fair market value for the book, again, don't buy over this cost. This is just the fair value, $145 to $196.
Mm.
So if you're paying $200, you're okay. It's given back to whoever's selling it, you're good. But if you go anywhere higher than that, you're paying too much. And then, yeah, Raw, you can get the issue as low as a buck if you play your cards right. So it's less than it cost when it came out.
That's crazy.
Which is very strange, all things considered. But that's the game. Yeah. They overprinted it. Let's just say that much. So, yeah, what's your first exposure to this character?
I mean...
Movie?
Pretty sure the first...
Yeah.
In the Spider-Verse.
Sure.
The famous, iconic post-credit
the
scene.
The stinger!
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so crazy because I was like... I remember everybody was just like, what is it? Wow, there's a stinger at the end of this cartoon movie. And then it's like, oh my God! It's Miguel O'Hara! Like, people freaked. People who knew who he was freaked out immediately. I freaked out because I was like, oh my God, it's Oscar Isaac.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, like, I don't have a, allow me to say this up front. I don't have a huge attachment to 2099 just because I love Peter Parker so much.
Yeah.
But I understand why he's such a big deal. And we'll get to that, obviously, in this episode. But yeah, it's I wouldn't have expected you to have heard about him before that at all.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, unless you played, like, older video games or maybe got a whiff of like one of the Spider-Man cartoons.
Maybe.
It wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But I do have a couple of trading cards here. I have more than this, but I only chose these two. So you can see very quickly, not your traditional Spider-Man, but very similar to that you see on screen.
Menacing.
Yes. It's, yeah. It's actually quite accurate too. So I'll give you this one if you want to take a look-see. And I will read from the 1993 Marvel Masterpieces. Oh, this is going to be interesting. So, trying to rid himself of an addiction to the drug Rapture, Alchemax why am I messing up?
Keeping this in.
Alchemax geneticists Miguel O'Hara forever changed his life when he was accidentally bombarded with the genetic structure of a spider. Granted superhuman strength and agility by this ordeal, as well his razor-sharp barbed talons on his fingers and arms, Miguel adopted the identity of one of history's greatest heroes, Spider-Man. Now, the Spider-Man of 2099 roams the streets of New York, protecting the innocent from the variety of villains that exist in his malevolent metropolis. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So, clearly, it's not just a number. He is quite literally from the future.
Yeah.
In 2099. And so, I mean, I imagine all of that was very new to you because, you know, it's worth saying that in the films, they don't give you an origin at all.
Yeah.
He's just there.
He's just there. He was chosen because he made the mistake in his world or whatever it was.
Right. So he decided to take on this
mantle,
daunting mantle of protecting canon events. But let's rewind a bit. Let's go back to the comic book version. So Miguel O'Hara. So I might say O'Hara or O'Hara. It's really O'Hara because he is Irish Mexican descent.
Ah.
So Miguel is the Mexican part, obviously, and then O'Hara. O'Hara.
O'Hara.
O'Hara.
Oh, no.
O'Hara. O'Hara. Scarlett O'Hara. So O'Hara. Miguel O'Hara is the Irish portion. So the introduction has a cold start. So the moment you open this issue, and I do have the screenshot right here, this is literally the first page of the comic.
Oh, wow.
Immediately introduced to this new spider. And he's in flight, in swing, and they introduce this futuristic metropolis. And so he's swinging along the city, New York. They don't call it Nueva York like they do in the film.
Oh, really?
That is primarily a Spider-Verse thing. But in the comics, they just call it New York. And you get an immediate feel for his process as well as his strength and ferocity. So like you said, menacing. Like the whole thing is like, he's not your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
He is not.
He's very gritty. And so... And I wanted to mention, I made a note here that, you know, in New York, in this version of New York, they don't curse at all. They say shock.
For everything?
For everything. So they're like, what the shock? Like, shut the fuck. No, wait, no. Shut the shock up. Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. Like, yes.
You holy shock.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right. So they say shock.
Interesting.
I don't remember if they have a reason for that. They just don't. That's how they get away with it. Other than the symbols exploding. And so, like any iconic origin, we then go back to the beginning of it all through these panels. You know, like he's swinging, he's trying to evade police, and you know, we go back and we meet Miguel O'Hara. And so he's very quickly, you see that he is sharp-tongued, quick-witted, and he's a genetic genius, and he works at this company called Alchemax. And so he's roughed up, he's weathered, he's kind of like over everything. Mm-hmm. He kind of has this sort of entitlement to him where he's just like, oh, things bore me now. I'm so smart, but I hate everybody. You know, that's kind of his demeanor.
I mean, sure.
Right. And so he doesn't really have companions and friends, and he doesn't look for people to fulfill that for him, but he does have an AI companion named Lila. And so Lila is the character that we do meet. We'll talk about her a little bit more later, but you know, Alchemax in this story is the most powerful corporation, by the way, stretching control across the US, and they create products for every consumer need, even down to housing and having a city of its own. So it's essentially the Amazon of 2099. So imagine if Amazon had their own, I mean, not the Amazon itself, but had like a city. And so that's like what has happened. So Alchemax in the future, you know, we have stories about them in this modern era and previous books, but in 2099, they've boomed into this huge enterprise of a universe in its own. And so Miguel's focus at Alchemax is imprinting genetic codes into human physiology. So he experiments. That's his job, is that he fuses together genes that might coincide and work and collaborate with one another, creating whatever they can. Because, again, they're just pumping out product and new scientific breakthroughs every day at Alchemax in this stage. So he's even put his own genes into the process. And so he has a copy of his genetic markup in the system. And so his superior at Alchemax, his name is Tyler Stone. And so Miguel conducts an experiment on this willing candidate, this man named Mr. Sims. And so the easiest way to compare what happens to Mr. Sims is, have you seen The Fly? I think it was 1982, 84 with Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis.
Been a while, but I think I've seen it. Yeah.
You remember that? Yeah. So that is what happens to Mr. Sims. He's really like, he's ready to go. He's like, yeah, I want to be this experiment. I have confidence in the science. And as soon as the thing is lifted up, you know, he's in this chamber and it's like, you know, it's like the Winter Soldier thing where it's misty and it opens up and it's not like the Steve Rogers thing at all.
He's Miguel's a fly.
Like, yeah, he's like some weird monstrous insect looking thing and he starts attacking everybody. And so they have to put him down. And so after this colossal failure on top of everything else, Miguel decides he is done with Alchemax. But when he goes to give Tyler Stone his notice, Stone is like, oh, you know, like, come on, sit down for a bit. Let's have some wine. And he gives him a drink. And Miguel downs it and he's like, you know, I really thought you would have taken this a little harder than you are. And he's like, oh, you know, whatever. And it ends up that Stone has slipped him this highly addictive, life-reliant hallucinogen drug that they produce, that Alchemax produces, and it's called Rapture. And so Stone's intention wasn't to kill Miguel, but instead to make him a drug junkie and keep him working at the company.
Jeez.
Right? He can't let him go. He's like, no, not going to kill you. Not going to let you go. I'm just going to make you a drug addict so you're here forever. Just like,
that's kind of insane.
Yeah. It's actually kind of scary, right? It's like, oh my gosh. And so, you know, when I was rereading this, I was like, okay, yeah. This is why it's dark. This is why they're like, no, forget what you know about Peter Parker. This is not Peter Parker. This is not just some variant instance. This is a very different human being who did not have a great time becoming Spider-Man. And so later, Miguel refuses this fate, right? He's like, you know what? Initially, he was like, I'm done. I can't. I'm going to just die by suicide. He's going to jump off a cliff or something. Yeah. You know? And so he, at this point, he's like, okay, you know what? No, I'm a genius. I can figure this out. I can get myself out of this. And so he then goes back to the lab after hours and he puts himself into the machine again and he wants to reset himself. So again, he put his genes into the catalog. So there's a version of his DNA in there that's clean, if you will. And so he's like, okay, I'm going to put this in and I'll be great. It'll be fine. But unfortunately for him, because this is the Spider-Man luck we all know and love, unfortunately for him, his immediate superior, this man named Aaron Delgado, came to the lab while Miguel is undergoing his experiment, and these two did not get along. It was very, you know, like they have all this dialogue in the book where Aaron is just trying to understand what Miguel is doing, and he's just giving him like. So much attitude.
Yeah.
Like, you just want to punch the guy. It's
as
really
one
bad.
Genius does. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. And so, Delgado saw this as an opportunity to get rid of him, like, and not in the way that Tyler Stone wanted to, like, keep him. He wanted to kill this man. And so Delgado then loads a spider specimen into the machinery, into the splicer or genetic thing with Miguel.
Yeah.
Miguel doesn't know. He's already halfway through the process. So he overrides and he puts in this spider signature, and the process almost, it makes the machine explode. It overloads. And so Delgado's like, ha-ha, finally, I got rid of him.
You're dead.
And then, you know, like the thing opens like it did with Mr. Sims, but Miguel is still alive. Yeah. And he's still intact, but he's just like, oh, God, what happened? And so Delgado's like, ah, okay, well, I have to kill him myself. And so the thing is that when Delgado approaches Miguel, thinking he's just normal Miguel O'Hara, he's actually met with this guy. So he is like a human spider, but still a more human.
Yeah,
spider.
Yeah.
So you see, these are the talons, actually.
Yeah.
So they're coming out from under his fingertips.
Oh, my gosh.
And he has fangs.
Eee.
And his eyes are different.
Yeah.
So this is his first exposure to light. And so Miguel's new mutation swiftly takes hold, and then Delgado is shaken, and he starts shooting at Miguel. He pulls out a gun. He's like, oh, won't you die? And he's like, boo, boo, boo. And so they start shuffling, and then the machine finally gives way. It buckles. It explodes. And the top portion of Alchemax just, you know, like a hole bursts through the, you know, 129th floor. And so Delgado he's dangling from the side, and Miguel kind of comes to his senses. He starts to regain consciousness more fully, and he's not hissing and acting like a spider anymore, and he goes to try and save this man. He wants him to die. They both want each other to die, but he's like, I can't consciously let this man just fall. So he reaches for him, but the thing is that he has no control. He's like Toby in the first movie, or even Andrew in his first movie, where things are getting sucked to him. And he grabs for Delgado, but his talons are inside of his skin. And so he starts slipping and then just starts ripping his arm. And Delgado, he's like freaking out. He's like, you're hurting me. You're hurting me. You're ripping my arm off. And then he falls. He dies.
No.
And so Alchemax and its security then look for what happened, because of course they all arrive on the scene. Alchemax has their own security, you know, hub too. I think we talked about this in a previous episode. But they all arrive on the scene. They're looking to see what happened, and then they spot this mysterious person, you know, shrouded up and also butt naked for what it is. And then they send this cyborg named Venture after this experiment gone wrong. And so Miguel quickly realizes the gravity of his new powers and responsibility and peaces out. He's like, nope, bye. And so that's the beginning of Spider-Man 2099. And so we're going to get into more of that origin as we go along here. But yeah, so that is very different, or at least not spoken of.
That is kind of insane.
Yeah, throughout.
It's a very dark, dark origin.
Yeah, exactly. And so I am curious if and what they will touch of the version in Spider-Verse. But Miguel O'Hara, Spider-Man 2099, no live action version. So we're just gonna refer to a cinematic version when we talk about the Spider-Verse one, which is, of course, voiced by Moon Knight himself, Oscar Isaac. First introduced in 2018, by the way.
Gross.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse in the film Stinger, like Jeff mentioned. Directed by Joaquin Dos Santos, Kemp Powers, and Justin Keig Thompson. So, so Miguel of 2099 introduced as a keeper within Nueva York, Earth 928B. And so I looked up because I was like, yeah, is this an official designation? Because 928 is technically this 2099 Earth on the comics. So they refer to it as B because it's denoted to not clash with the comic book version, obviously, because he's from another universe, but not the comic books. So it's like, so Peter B. Parker is also notably from Earth 616B because it's not the main priority. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, okay, that makes sense. And so, yeah, the idea of canon events is what essentially drives Miguel in the second film, where we do get to know him better, and he is menacing and daunting and a bit scary. And but yeah, you know, Miguel's his reality is altered by the canon events and the lack thereof, and they start to destroy the universes that they're resolved from. So canon events are necessary. They're necessary evils, basically, is what the premise of Miguel's goal is as far as the films are concerned. And so the Miguel we see on screen is also poised as an antagonist more than he is a protagonist.
Yeah.
which you know, this is probably going to switch, I'm sure, because he is a hero, technically.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's not a villain. They make him to be daunting and scary, but he's not a villain. He's still a Spider-Man. So yeah. So what are your thoughts on Miguel in the films?
I mean, he's huge.
No! Which is so funny because they did that for the film.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Film. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, damn, this. He got big shoulders.
Yeah, he's
and he got voluptuous hair too. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, yeah, he's menacing. Like when he's in his full suit, it's like, whoa, this guy takes over the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, and he gets into like this scuffle with Miles, and it's just so like, damn, like you are an anomaly, Miles.
Yeah, yeah.
Da, da.
Yeah.
And that's when Miles is like, nah, I'm gonna do my own thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
On the bullet train.
Yeah.
Like that entire scene, the way that, you know, again, like kudos to all these animators lately. They're just so fantastic.
Yeah.
And the way that they even introduced it in the trailer when he just grabs him and he like slams him down into the train and he's just like.
All the Spideys.
Dude, he's like four times his size.
He's huge.
And mass. He's huge. And yet he's still able, Miles is still able to kind of hold his own against this, you know, gargantuan man of a spider. But yeah, I would say not best representation, but like it is a very impactful version of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, like you get this version in the comics and he is a tragedy of his own. He's not a happy man.
Yeah.
But he is very dark and gloomy. And so he is dark and gloomy in the films, but he's also so freaking powerful.
Yeah.
To the point where it is ominous and scary. But I love how he is in the films. And I do think giving him the bad cop angle is great. Like, I'm sure he'll have some shining moment. Because, yeah, a part of the film that is very touching is the part where we learn more about his humanity as he was trying to save his own variant's daughter, you know, and how that whole impact came to be, and how he tried to make it into a good thing. So he's not necessarily attacking Miles out of anger or, like, any sort of villain type of origin. It's just that he wants to protect the main timeline, but that's more Loki. But like,
I was gonna say timeline too.
Yeah, but the great web,
the
right?
universe. Yeah, yeah, the Madam Web,
the Madam Web, Madam Web. Yeah. So he's just a protector. It's very much a protector. So we can roll into his aesthetic. So, you know, as you can see on the screenshots, Jeff, like the original outfit was It's definitely more sleek. You could see his body type is just athletic. It's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's just skin.
They all got good bodies.
Yeah. Very, very slender. But yeah, the original concept of the outfit is particularly interesting because, and I think they mentioned this in Spider-Man 2099 number 2, is that it was originally purchased by Miguel. It's a Death Head costume that Miguel bought in Mexico during a visit during Dia de los Muertos.
I see it.
Yeah.
Like a luchador.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes. And so Miguel quips in the comic that he may as well use it because it's quote unquote his days of normal are dead.
Sure.
So that gives you insight into how his personality is. But yeah, so he quite literally pulls it out of his closet and he makes some modifications to make it, more comfortable for him to wear as a quote unquote superpowered being. And so he later adapted it for his Spider-Man, activities. And he added this remnants of a glider. So there's this incident where in 2099, there's this people that are like doing public announcements, but it's a person dressed as Thor and they're on a glider and they have like a bullhorn.
Yeah.
And so there's this incident where they crash and whatever, and Miguel rips off part of that glider and then he's like, oh, this might actually do pretty well. And he initially uses it to hide his face. Like it's kind of like the Daredevil and Jessica Jones scarf thing where he's like, I need something. And he puts something around his face to guise his identity. But he then later uses it as a cape. So the suit itself is designed by the second suit. Okay, I'm jumping ahead here for myself. But you know what we see in Spider-Verse is a near replica of the comic book. Obviously, you know, it's like you can't change that. You can't change it without messing it up. But it's almost identical. The only difference is the spider itself, and also the webbing. I'm curious why they decided to take it off. Like maybe it's not daunting enough if he has a cape and little webbings. But I thought it's pretty cool as far as the comic's concerned. And then you can obviously tell that the one major difference, at least aesthetically, is the size of him.
Oh yeah,
he's huge. Even compared to the Stinger. In the Stinger, he was more or less normal.
Yeah,
sized.
Yeah. Oh, then, yeah. And then in the sequel, it's like
jacked. He's jacked.
Jeez.
Yeah. And so the hulking stature has been further adopted in the comics as well as across the Spider-Verse.
Mm-hmm.
So with volume 3 of the 29 series, a new modernized version of the suit was then introduced. And that's the screenshot you'll see in the middle. There's this white suit. I actually love this white suit quite a bit. And it was introduced for Miguel, designed by Chris Anka. So Chris Anka is actually the lead character designer for Across the Spider-Verse. So he actually designed this new suit for Miguel, predating it before he actually got hired on as the character designer.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a dream job for this guy. He loves Spider-Man 2099. But yeah, you know, I dig the white as well. It's got the same sort of aesthetics as the luchador look and such. And he has a little more high-tech advantage to it. But all of these suits are the most durable spider suits. And they use this thing called unstable molecules.
Same.
Yeah, right? Oh, God, that's such a vibe. I didn't even realize it. Or UMF. They're called, unstable molecule fabric. And so this synthetic material was created by genius Reed Richards himself.
Of course.
And it alters and adapts to its environment, or in this case, its bearer. So it remains resilient no matter what the circumstances. So it can do...
The Fantastic Four suits?
Yes. That's basically it. So imagine if Reed Richards of 2024 created this suit material, it just lasted beyond generations. So now it's something normal. Like the way that Miguel even talks about it when he first pulls it out of the closet is that he's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm going to have to buy UMF, like, t-shirts and clothing for the rest of my life, but it's worth it. So it's like a high-end material in 2099.
It's like Gucci.
It's Gucci in 2099.
It's Prada.
Oh, God, yeah. Exactly. It's high-end. And so it's something that's more more accessible in the future. So whereas now it would be like only superheroes could have. But in Miguel's time, it's like, oh, I can go to the store and get some cool UMF pants. Yeah, so that's more or less his outfits. And he doesn't, you know, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they adapt, because everybody gets their glow up, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious for Beyond the Spider-Verse what they'll do to them then, or if they'll switch halfway through. But I think at some point we might see the traditional cape part, the webbing part, or even the white suit. Who knows? So for powers and paraphernalia, this guy, my word, my gosh. So, I mean, it isn't too much different than the Spider-Man we know and love, of course, but Miguel's got his own mixed bag of stuff, including, but not limited to, superhuman strength, speed, agility, reflexes, stamina, durability, tactile sense, and hearing, as well as telepathy, telescopic and night vision, regeneration, talons, fangs, and organic webbing. But he has no spider sense.
Can't have them all.
No, man.
You can have all the cool stuff. Yeah. Not spider sense.
Right. So he has, but the fact that he has telepathy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, telepathy. It's in regeneration. Like he has these, you know, I forgot which spiders in particular that he's modeled after, but they take facets from like wolf spider and tarantula and such, like, you know, that's why he is, again, hulking and bulkier. He also bears genius level intellect, and is skilled at hand-to-hand combat and has formidable computer skills and advanced marksmanship. So he is just a dangerous man. In short,
sounds dangerous.
Very dangerous man. And on screen, Miguel is comparably the same, same power, same skill sets, with the exception of the organic webbing. Like I don't believe he has that. I think he has web shooters, but, additionally, it appeared that with the on-screen version, they amplified his fang-like nature. So there's that part in Across the Spider-Verse when he has somebody, I forgot who it is, and his mask is off and he like it shows a silhouette.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes into like full like straight up vampire mode. Oh. Do you remember this? And
vaguely.
He has his mouth open and he's like, ah, and he's about to bite this person's neck. And then he pulls back. And everyone was like, wait. Did they just make him a vampire? And it's like, no. Actually, it's just that they amplified the whole fangs and his red eyes, because he does have red eyes. He spends a bunch of time in these early issues of the comic books wearing sunglasses because he almost is like a vampire, where he's like, bro, I have red eyes.
He's halfway there. Yeah,
he's halfway there. So I think what the intention with that scene was that they just wanted to convey like he is like a vampire spider where he's got these crazy fangs and red eyes. It's pretty much a vampire. It's like that screenshot I showed you.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is more or less an exaggeration of his powers, or at least we think, you know, in the comics, he has these elongated canine teeth and they secrete non-toxic paralyzing venom. And he also has short retractable talons.
Gosh.
Yeah, so in his fingers and his toes. So that helps him climb, whereas, you know, Peter Parker and what we presume is Miles and the rest of them, you just have these really tiny follicles that you can't see and they're like suction cups.
Yeah.
But with Miguel, it's like, no, he has literal like things that go into anything he touches. So it all enables him to crawl and very much act like a spider. And so from there, we'll go to family, friends, and affiliations. So this is an interesting group of people. Almost all the characters that we're talking about today, they do not have animated counterparts yet, if ever. So we won't have much to compare it to. So this is just really more of like expanding on Miguel's background and what we could see in the film one way or another. So George O'Hara was his father, an Alchemax employee who assisted in designing the security and surveillance grid for the Public Eye, which is New York's police force owned by Alchemax. Unfortunately, he was not only an abusive husband and abusive father, but George and his wife eventually divorced, and George himself started a new family. He said peace, left, and he was gone, never heard from again. George was also alienated from his former family, then onward, and then he eventually died at a young age, and much to Miguel's regret, because he quite literally wanted his father to suffer old age. He hated his father.
Yeah, well, I've heard that story before.
Yeah. And again, like, no animated counterpart for him or Conchata Connie O'Hara, his mother. And so, yeah, Miguel and his mom, they have a particularly strained relationship. Miguel believing it's all due to the fact that he thinks he strongly resembles his late father. But the truth is, the strain between Miguel and his mother is not that he looks like his father, George, but from the fact that Conchata had been keeping a secret from her son and that he was actually the love child of she and his boss, Tyler Stone.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So Tyler Stone, the high-ranking executive officer at Alchemax, who also poisoned him with the addictive
drug. Dude, these stories are insane.
Yeah, it's like, who? What were these guys doing? It's like, I want to be like, Peter David, are you good? Because like,
that's
oh my
dark.
Gosh, super dark. And so not only was that something, but additional strain stemmed with the reveal of Miguel, of his identity as Spider-Man. And so his mother, you know, when he told her, he's like, you know, when he becomes more you know, ingrained in the world, right?
Yeah.
He's more known while and noticed. You know, he tells his mother he wants to be upfront with her. He's like, Mom, I'm Spider-Man. And she's like, no, you're not.
Sure.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, right. You're not capable of doing that. And so he's met with total skepticism and denial. And so after overwhelming proof, Conchata, you know, then learns to believe him, and then she reconciles with pride for her son. So she realizes, okay, I'm the one in the wrong here. And so they've kind of worked on their relationship since then. And then there's Gabriel O'Hara. And so this is Miguel's younger brother and also the favorite son between the O'Hara brothers.
Of course.
And he's often referred to as the good son. The two have, you know, expected instances of their and their healthy share of sibling rivalry, something that comes, it's amplified more so once Gabe discovers Miguel's identity as Spider-Man. And he actually knew before his brother told him. So, you know, they kind of had these moments of like, Miguel, you know, he feels like an ordinary human being while Miguel is, you know, running around as Spider-Man. I'm not sure if I said Gabriel or Miguel right there, but again, no animated counterpart. But yeah, he seems to be kind of like a more or less a stunning ray of sunshine who just is a realist. He's a realist, you know, wants his brother to be well and be healthy, and yet one thing happens after another. And then there's Gabriella O'Hara. So this is actually the flip side. There was no comic book counterpart for Gabriella. And she's undoubtedly a homage to Gabriel. So Gabriella O'Hara in the cinematic universe, she's the daughter of presumably Prime Earth or Earth 1610's Miguel O'Hara.
Okay.
So she's the little girl.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, she gets erased from the lack of the canon event. And so after her father was murdered, the Miguel we know stepped in and tried to raise the child as his own until her universe was destroyed thanks to that canon event. So it's interesting how they played that. So I feel like that's negating the potential of us seeing a Gabriel O'Hara because we got Gabriella. So I don't think we'll learn more about her. We may see her again in the next film, but just as a short, you know, maybe another cameo or something. But there is somebody that we do see quite a bit of, and I adore this character. Her name is Lila, and in the comics, she is known as Lyrate Lifeform Approximation. So that's where they get the L-Y
nice.
From Lyrate, and then L from Lifeform, A from Approximation. Lila. So she is AI from the 22nd century and the personal holographic assistant to Miguel. She had a bit of, you know, like all things said and done, she is, again, she's quite helpful, very nice. Like if you see in the screenshot, she's just got a vibe to where it's just like almost like caring, like, oh, you know, you got to take care of yourself, you have 6 calls, let me read them to you, you have to go to the grocery store, you know, things like that. But she did have a bit of a Miss Minutes corruption once upon a time.
Of course, as one does.
And she attempted to kill Miguel's girlfriends because she's prime woman. She's the woman in his life.
And so, loser!
I was like, wow, that sounds familiar. So very, very similar to Miss Minutes and the whole he who remains sort of
dynamic.
Yeah.
Gross.
But despite the 293 different appearances baked into Delilah's schematics, so she can skin herself 293 different ways, Miguel only relied on this Marilyn Monroe look. So this is supposed to be Marilyn Monroe that you see on the screenshot. Okay. And so when you know, early on in the 2099 books, she actually goes through them. She goes through, like, there's one that looks like Alfred from Batman.
Oh, I'd want that one for sure. Yeah.
And then she rolls through one that looks like Aunt May.
Oh, gosh.
And he full on looks at her and he looks at the fourth wall. And then he looks back at her and he's like, delete that one. Like, he does not like it. He does not like the nurturing, like, oh, did you do your homework today, Miguel? Would you like some wheat cakes? And he's just like, straight up fourth wall, delete it. I don't like it. It's like, oh, you are not Peter Parker. Not Peter Parker at all. And so, of course, Lila in the comic books, voiced by Greta Lee, first appeared also in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And so, yeah, she's pretty much consistent with the comic book version, except for the fact that she is, like, snappy as hell.
Yeah.
Like, she talks back, the whole, like, selfie thing. So do you remember this? I think we talked about this when the film came out. But do you know which version of the movie that you saw? Because Lila says different things.
Oh, of the most recent movie?
Yeah, of Across the Spider-Verse, yeah.
I've seen this.
Yes.
I don't know which version I saw.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think I saw the one that was not as common because she did something different at the end of some scene. I should have recollected this better. But yeah, there is multiple versions. I don't know if this is true anymore because I get that was happening because they were down to the wire, I guess, editing the film. Yeah. And so there were two at least versions of Across the Spider-Verse floating around. And Lila was a big reason you could tell because her dialogue changed. But yeah, you know, I'm curious if that still remains true or if even in the digital version, which version they went with. But otherwise, yeah, I think Greta Lee's version is an awesome version of this character. I think it's definitely more realistic in the sense that she's a great counterpart balance to Miguel.
Yeah.
And how dark he is in the films, even without this crazy origin story. But yeah, beyond Lila, he doesn't really have, and you know, his immediate family doesn't quite have many people to rely on, but there is this thing called the Spider Society.
Yep.
With all the spiders. And in the films, more primarily, Gwen Stacy, Jessica Drew, Spider-Punk, Peter B. Parker, and Ben Reilly.
Ben Reilly's so hilarious.
He's so funny.
Yes.
Is that Miguel. Josh Keaton? I can't remember.
No, that's I think that's Andy Samberg.
Is that Andy Samberg?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, where
he's
right.
Like, where he's like, yeah. Yes, we're going to go there. All right.
I'm so dark.
Look at me.
so good. So Ben Reilly is somebody we could talk about, but I mean, so little of him in the film.
It's so funny though.
So good. And so are there any particular dynamics in the films that you enjoy when it comes to Miguel and somebody else with the spiders?
Oof.
Because his chemistry with Jessica Drew is incredible.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's Issa Rae, that one for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, him in Spider-Punk is hilarious.
Love. I love anything that has to do with
Spider-Punk. Yeah, because Spider-Punk is just kind of like, yeah, I'm against the man, but yeah, whatever you say, boss. But also, I'm out.
Yeah, exactly. I love him. You know what I forgot, related but not, is that I ordered the Hot Toys for Spider-Punk.
Uh-huh.
I think he comes out this summer.
Oh.
But I ordered him last year.
Nice.
And I was like, oh yeah, I ordered that.
Yeah.
I can't wait. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be so cool. But yeah, I don't think I have a particularly favorite dynamic. I think they all have, again, it's like a great balance because there's all these, you know, and that's the thing, right? Is that these Spider-Verse films are so great at fulfilling dynamics and balances when introducing literally hundreds of characters at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that they have Gwen and how she can be pretty chill, a little passive, a little too passive, and how she balances out with somebody with a personality like Miguel's, and she's still on his side, even more so than she is Miles. And then, of course, yeah, Jessica Drew, the way that she's kind of like, get down to the business, get it done, let's go. You know, very much in control as much as he is, but in a different method. You know, like speaking of bad cop, she's the good cop. And then, yeah, I love the laxness of Spider-Punk and how he's just more or less an associate, but for the cause. And then Peter B., you know, him coming in to kind of coerce Miles onto
pretty
their
much,
side.
Yeah.
And yes, Ben Reilly. I can't get over Ben Reilly.
Oh, look at me. Yes, I'm so sneaky.
I'm so moody.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh. So good. I'm looking forward to what they end up doing in the next film because, of course, you know, Miles is trapped in the alternate universe.
Yeah.
So he's like twice removed at this point.
He's in the universe where the spider should have bit that Miles.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because Miguel wasn't part of that crew, the rescue crew. Because, of course, we see Noir and Penny.
Everybody.
Everybody's back. The gang's back. Spider-Ham.
Spider gang.
Yeah. And so I'm curious how Miguel is going to have his sort of redemption, not only for the spiders, but also himself. Because that he has to come around. He has to.
Yeah.
It's just part of the Spider-Man way. But yeah, guess we'll see. So love interests. These always end up being the spiciest part of the podcast, I think.
Everybody just be finagling with everybody.
Yeah, there's a way of putting it. So first, there is Sheena Kwan. And so she was a childhood friend of Miguel's. And of course, you know, they grew up together, got interested, and they became romantic interests in one another. The relationship ends pretty badly, though, because it intersects with Miguel's other love interest, which we'll talk about in a second. Yeah.
Everyone's messy.
You can already see what's coming. And so, but like with any major love interest, Sheena, she got caught in the crosshairs of Spider-Man's day-to-day simply for existing.
Oh my God.
And so eventually, evidently, you know, speaking of Lila, she had a tattoo of Marilyn Monroe on her stomach.
Mm.
And so something that Miguel then later used. To program Lila.
There you go. That makes so much sense.
Yeah. Now it's like,
I see it. I see the vision.
Yeah, that's what happened there. So Sheena, she's still out in the atmosphere. She, you know, again, didn't end well, but they're still connected in ways. But there was a very interesting love interest in Dana D'Angelo. And so Dana and Miguel's relationship is nothing shy of complicated. So I just put bullet points. Bullet point one, Dana was dating Miguel's younger brother, Gabriel. Bullet point two, Dana began cheating on Gabriel with Miguel. All
right, this girl's insane.
Bullet point three, Miguel was dating Sheena, cheating on Sheena with Dana. And then finally, Miguel eventually proposed to Dana.
That's insane.
So they just, like, who did that? Is that ABBA? They started dating each other. Shania Twain. That's Shania Twain.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, she was dating her producer, Mutt Wolf. I forgot what his name. Mutt.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, she was dating her producer for a long, long time, and then he was cheating on her with another lady. So she was like, "All right, fine," and she cheated on him with the lady's husband, and now she's married to that guy.
Yeah, that's messy.
It's so messy. So Miguel a little messy in all corners of his
life.
That
is messy.
So
it's the shoulders.
It's the broad shoulders. Even despite the fact, even despite a proposal, the two broke up after Miguel realized Tyler Stone was his biological father. It was just too much for him. It got overwhelming, and he became even worse of a person. And so he was like, I can't do this. And then it gets messier because Dana starts dating Tyler Stone.
Yo, there's so many other people to just date.
Yeah, right. So imagine this, if you will.
That's messy, dude.
Dana has not only dated Miguel's younger brother, but Miguel and his biological father. Jeff's just shaking his head.
Dude, there's probably like someone like I know that has like done this, not that's personally, just, like, but that has like done this kind of dating circle.
Yeah, the layer.
And
the
it's so messy.
Dip of mess.
It's gross.
It's so crazy to me. So I was like, wow, this girl. But not in a happy ending per se, but perhaps a wise one. She was later killed by Venom. And deeply mourned by Miguel, but she was killed by Venom. So, karma.
That's like the most randomest ending to that story.
It's called karma, baby. And it goes around. But yeah, so needless to say, neither of those women have animated counterparts. I do not think they'll be doing that because they have this such a almost pure version of Miguel.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's shit.
That is messy. So funny.
Messy Miguel. Messy Miguel. So as far as notable adversaries go, as you can imagine, Miguel's adversaries are very similar, if not straight up 29-9 versions of Peter Parker's, especially when it comes to like Vulture, Venom, Goblin. You just slap on 2099 to that bad boy and there's a version of it. So Punisher 2099, Wolverine 2099. Yeah, they're all there.
These versions always like mess me up, man. Yeah. Like these universes are just...
Yeah, they're so fruitful.
It's exhausting.
It's a lot. I think this is also why I didn't get too deep into it. Because like looking at it from a timeline perspective, again, I think I said this in our Rogue or X-Men episode, that in 92, when I was a wee lass, I was so into X-Men that I just kind of ignored.
Fair.
Yeah, right? I was like, okay, I can focus on Spider-Man, but X-Men is my bread and butter. I only have so much mental capacity for this stuff. And 2099 seemed like, I was like, ooh, I don't think I can handle that. So I did not venture that way. As far as adversaries go, I did look to comic book resources for a list, and I was like, okay, I think I agree with this. And so I just pulled their top three. So the first on this list, speaking of Moira MacTaggert that Jeff and I were talking about earlier, Kevin MacTaggert. So there's this character named Proteus. And so, again, if this last name seems familiar, it is indeed because this Omega-level powered mutant called Proteus is this the son of Moira MacTaggert, a human and ally of the X-Men. This obviously changes in the comic book. She becomes a mutant. That's another story for another day. But
Moira MacTaggert is the girl in Days of Future Past, right? Friend of Charles Xavier.
She is Rose Byrne.
Yes. Okay. Yes. All right.
Who does not have a Scottish accent or Irish accent that she should. Like she's... I think she's Scottish, Irish. But in the cartoon, she's the one human sitting at the table with White Queen and Banshee.
Mm.
And she says something like, who invited him to be on the... I can't remember what she said. Jeff is mortified. What did she say?
That was like, good.
Who invited him to be on the council? And then, you know, like White Queen's like, of course, the one human speaks. She said whatever she said.
Dude, people hate humans so much.
Dude, reverse. I mean, it's that Uno card. That Uno
I mean,
Rubis
sure,
card.
I get it. Yeah, like, we suck.
Right. Yeah, the humans are, you know, the Homo sapiens.
Take them back to the Milky Way ghetto, bro.
The Milky Way ghetto. Yeah. So Kevin MacTaggert, he is indeed the son of Moira in the comics. And so... It's interesting that a human was able to spawn a mutant. But again, it's just part of the genetics that, you know, when they come to maturity, you just happen to mutate. And so in 2099, This storyline actually stemmed from House of M. So he came from present time, and then he jumped across books where Miguel helped this team called the Exiles. And so this was a team, I believe it was Blink and Morph, who we are familiar with now.
Yeah.
It's that Morph. And a bunch of other, I think it was Sabretooth, maybe, and a couple of other characters. It was very offbeat, almost slapsticky, pretty pushing the envelope team. And so they wanted to stop him because he was time traveling. And so he jumped to 2099 and he became, a thorn in Miguel's side.
Mm-hmm.
And he's incredibly powerful. He's not the most powerful by any means, but he is, again, Omega level.
Uh-huh.
So he was wreaking havoc. And so the Exiles and Miguel, came together to stop him. And thankfully they did. But, he and the rest of these villains that we're going to talk about, again, no animated counterparts anywhere. And then there's Carnage 2099. This is exactly what you think it is. Yeah, so this stemmed in the 2099 Dark Genesis storyline where another Alchemax executive named Michael Eric bonded. And so he kept it like a trophy. He had this specimen of the Carnage symbiote.
Yeesh.
And so these, I think they were robbers or somebody came and broke into his apartment and he mm-hmm. wanted to use it to defend himself. But instead, it killed him.
Gross.
And then used his corpse as like a vessel to Ooh. Function. So it's a dead guy, but with the Carnage symbiote. As if he wasn't gross enough already.
That sounds uncomfortable.
Yeah. So it drained his life, used his corpse. It was just running around. I put LOL at the end. I don't know why I found that so funny, but yeah. And so that, again, like Miguel and Peter have so many parallels. And so mm-hmm. instead of Venom, it is very much more of a Carnage thing, despite the fact that Venom killed Dana.
which is hilarious, which I find hilarious. So funny.
Girl, it came for you. And then topping his list of adversaries was indeed Tyler Stone, his own biological father.
Mm. And daddy issues.
Super daddy issues. But if you read the books and you kind of gain a sense of their dynamic, it is very eerily similar to Norman Osborn and Peter Parker.
Mm.
Very similar. So I get it. It makes sense. But there isn't much elsewise to expand on, and he continuously uses Alchemax's resources to hunt down Spider-Man. So whether or not he knows it's Miguel, does not care. He just wants to get this prime specimen and get him under his power, and also to kill him at the same time and eradicate his existence because control and power, as these guys are made of. So again, no animated counterpart. And so on the cinematic side, while it's difficult to truly pinpoint adversaries for Miguel in Spider-Verse, he fought Vulture at the beginning.
Yeah,
that was pretty cool. I don't think he fought anybody else.
Yeah, I don't think so either. He's fighting himself.
Yeah,
he's battling demons himself.
That's exactly right. I think that's pretty much it, right? Like he's fighting back his own powers. He's fighting for his sanity, and he's just trying to get his job done. Miles is a sore spot, but I still wouldn't call him an adversary. He's just a kid in the way,
Miguel's just trying to do his job.
Exactly. That's right. He's just trying to be Spider-Man. But do you think he and Miles Morales are gonna go toe to toe, or is that a Miles?
I don't think so. I wouldn't say toe to toe, but I also wouldn't like.
And Prowler, for the record.
Yeah, it's gonna like I feel like that last movie is gonna be like a Miles versus Miles thing, and it's like a metaphor of like, oh, you're battling yourself.
Yeah.
So you won't be free.
Yeah.
Until you free yourself from yourself, type of thing.
Yeah, so, I think so too.
But where Miguel comes into play, I don't know. Maybe like he'll would be like, he's like, ugh, I have to stop this, mm-hmm. but I can't. Mm-hmm. So do what you gotta do,
yeah.
Team.
Yeah, like I think all these ideas are just echoes of each other, because I think that, as you just said, the Miles versus Miles and fighting himself is also a reflection of Miguel, right?
Like, yeah, yeah.
His issue occurred because he was trying to fulfill his own destiny in another lifetime. So I think that, and then Miguel will, you know, possibly realize, like, yeah, no, he can't do this. This is an endless stream of happenings, you know? He can't control all of them.
Because also that Earth, right, that Miles is in now, that's the Earth that has no Spider-Man. That's why that world is so messed up.
Abysmal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think maybe that will be resolved in the first half, and then the second half will indeed be more Miles versus Miles and that long term, like,
and the team up. We need that team up.
The epic team up that we're hearing so many rumors about. God knows who's gonna show up, but we'll see.
Everybody.
Roger Rabbit style?
Just
real people with animation, maybe?
That would be insane.
That would be truly insane.
Very insane.
But the fact that it has like a, there's like an indefinite date now.
I'll take it, man. Take all the time you need.
I know. I'm like, come
but
on.
As long as, you know, as long as Gwen and Spider-Punk are back.
Yeah.
We're
locked in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see if he actually ends up having any actual adversaries in the long run, or if he gets like a spin-off and they explore more of New York in 2099. We'll see. But yeah, nothing beyond that in his crazy family lineage and family
Dude,
drama.
So insane.
It's so wild. I was like, oh God. My goodness. I was like, who inspired this?
What trauma is being projected right now?
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, it's all coming from somewhere. Where is it coming from?
All trauma.
Right.
No love, just trauma.
Trauma. Trauma and drama.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. So in other versions and in other media, so we could quite literally have covered so many things about Miguel, because although he is technically a variant of sorts, he also has variants, obviously. So needless to say, with the Spider-Verse being so crucial to this character, there are an abundance of Miguels running around.
I'm sure.
There's also a new main Spider-Man 2099 that was introduced in 2019. And so Miguel is from Earth 928. Spider-Man 2099 is from Earth 928. Now there is a Spider-Man of Earth 2099 who is now Spider-Man 2099.
Okay.
That's a bit confusing. There's
Say
a lot
nine
of numbers.
One more time.
Yeah, so it's very interesting. Uh-huh. So he is now considered the primary Spider-Man 2099, and he hails from Earth 2099. But otherwise, is pretty darn similar to Miguel O'Hara, who, by the way, is supposed to look like Peter Parker, but just a little different.
Copy.
So this Oscar, I know this Oscar Isaac version is definitely straying.
All I know is Oscar Isaac.
Yeah, I know.
That's all I care about.
It's Oscar Isaac fine. But yeah, so there is a new version of this character, and yeah, it's complicated. It's so much more complicated than it used to be. And then, of course, there are, I mean, this is so wild. Would you believe there are 18 variants of this character in video games alone?
Uh-huh.
18.
18?
Yeah. So there's like Lego, Spider-Man, like, was it, I forgot what it's called. There's this amazing game, Shattered Dimensions.
Oh, okay.
There's one in there, you know. And of course, we see the suit in Sony Spider-Man 2.
Insomniac Spider-Man, yep.
And then, of course, he was mentioned in the Spider-Bot mission in Spider-Man 2.
When you collect all of them,
yeah. Yeah. So it's like, he's right there. We're going to see him. So I guess there'll be 19 at some point whenever they finish this third game.
Yeah.
And then, in animation, there is one other significant version of Miguel in animation, where he's voiced by actor Freddie Rodriguez in Ultimate Spider-Man. So that's the show that came out not too long ago. Mm-hmm. It's been a few years for sure, but very popular version of the show. Miguel makes quite a few appearances, I believe. And yeah, that one was really well liked as well, but we have never seen him as prominent as he is in Across the Spider-Verse.
Mm.
And so when it comes to Almost Was, I have no idea.
Like, I mean,
this was a crapshoot. Like, could not find anything. I think Oscar Isaac had it in the bag.
He always does. Yeah, he always does.
Yeah, I think they just approached him. We're like, hey, we have an idea. And he was like, okay.
And it's just voice?
And it's just voice. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so do you have any other predictions as far as the future of the character in the Sony Spider-Man universe?
I think he makes just one final appearance in the last Spider-Verse movie.
Sure.
And I think that's pretty much it. I mean, these Spider-Verse movies have been amazing already. First one, second one.
Yeah.
So the third one, it's got to be all-encompassing.
Yeah.
So I feel like you get one more dose of him in there.
Yeah.
And that might be it, in my honest opinion, because I think delving into these characters, especially like these different Spider-Man verse characters, in animation, it makes sense. To do this in live action,
it would be
kind of, it would get like cartoony at some point.
Like
at the end of No Way Home, like you can only do so much. And the reason why that worked, it's because of, you know, Toby and Andrew.
Right.
And then in Multiverse of Madness, it's like, even seeing that many characters, you're like, oh, okay, this is a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so exactly. To do like a version of that live action, I think it'd be very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So in animation, I think it makes sense. But I think after the last Spider-Verse movie, that might be it.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Couldn't imagine them trying to even do live action of this character. Even, I mean, Sony probably could. But yeah, so,
are you sure? Are we sure?
Yeah, I know.
Like, are we sure about that?
The sky's the limit.
Are we sure about that?
So I would prefer that they keep him to animation because they are doing such a great job as far as the animation studio is concerned. I think what we'll see in Across the Spider-Verse and potentially, or sorry, Beyond, maybe we'll get a spin-off of some sort. But I think that's gonna be it.
Yeah.
And he'll have some semblance of a happy ending, at least for Miguel, in Miguel's sense of happiness.
Well, whatever he deems happy.
Exactly. So, suggested reading. This was hard for me because I'm not super well informed as far as Spider-Man 2099 goes, but anything from the Spider 2099 run, the original one especially, it is cool to go back and really see the roots of this character and then kind of follow up with. I really enjoyed Volume 3. I read Volume 3 and that came out on this is the white suit version, that came out on the heels of Spider-Verse, so the original storyline. So, of course, that as well. So right there, those three, original Spider-Man 2099, Volume 3 of Spider-Man 2099, and the Spider-Verse, like, arc, every single one. There's a title, there's a, what is it, Into the Spider-Verse, and all of the introductions and crossovers you can imagine. They're all fantastic. And so the Volume 3 version is 2015 version from Peter David Francesco Mantina and Frank D'Amata. And then there's also Spider-Man 2099 Unlimited number 1. And it showcases like 2099 and his newly generated villain Mutagen. Yeah, some cool stuff. There's also Punisher 2099 and anything 2099.
That number's gonna be ingrained in my head.
You're gonna see the dollar store and be like 2099.
I'll be like, ah.
So definitely get you some of that 2099 action. They get a little hoagie sometimes, but Miguel's pretty spicy. He keeps it interesting.
I agree.
It's a good read. Yeah.
His whole family lineage is spicy as hell.
But like I said, buddy, once we're ready to talk about Cyclops, you're going to be like, what is happening?
Nah, the Summer's Gray stuff is...
It's going to be so good.
It's toxic.
I'm that meme. I'm hunched over. I'm palming my hands like, yeah, man. We going to get into this. So we can't wait. But before we get to that, our next episode, with Thunderbolts rumbling, no pun intended, we figured it'd be a good time to finally revisit the world of Black Widow and discuss all things Red Guardian.
Oh, the Red Guardian,
the
yes.
Red Guardian. It's me. The Red Guardian.
It's me, the Red Guardian.
You don't have to get so descriptive.
Oh, I can't wait. Oh, I'm so sorry. And anyone who's remotely Russian.
I'm so sorry.
We're already apologizing. So that's the end of the show. And finally, thank you to all of our Patreon supporters, as well as a special We Are Groot salute to Edgar, Andrea, Ashley, Ariel, Andrew, Tyler, Melanie, Joe, Liz, Robin, Ed, Laura, Eve, Jenny, Chris, Nats, Katie, and Sherry. Follow us on social, STRKCNTRST. And if you like what you hear, please review, rate, and subscribe.
Woo!
And that's the end of the show.
Once again, thank y'all for listening. And we will catch you in the next one.
See you later.
Bye.
Shock. Bye.
Whoa. What the?
I'm Spider-Man. I need you to come with
me. Who the heck are you?
I just told you that. Listen. I'm from the future.
How dare you point at me?
You were pointing first.
It's rude to point.
You're being very rude. You're not even believing what
Which
I'm
saying. Which one pointed first?
Spider-Man pointed first, obviously.
You're pointing at me right now as you say that.
You're
look
pointing.
At you.
I'm
look
just
at
pointing
your
at your pointing.
Look at your
which
finger
is different
right
than
now.
Normal
what is
pointing.
You are pointing.
You haven't seen
you're
pointing
accusing
until
me
I get
of pointing
you, and then
while
you'll
you're
know.